RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So more on the aftermath of Cyclone Gabrielle in the Hawke's Bay. Right now we're going to discuss the Independent Flood Review, Ian Wishart's report. We've had Ian on a couple of times already on RCR, so you'll be familiar with what he's been reporting. And the resignation of the head of Hawke's Bay Civil Defence. We're joined again by Louise Parsons, who's been an outspoken local about the failures of response to Cyclone Gabrielle and the ongoing impact on flood-affected homeowners. Louise, good to have you back. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Paul.
What do you make of the recent developments?
So, first of all, I'm thrilled that the guy's finally resigned. I would hope that he was pushed rather than resigned, because if he had any sort of moral compass, he would have resigned a very long time ago. But yeah, now that this independent review's come out, there would have been no option, surely.
You're referring to Ian McDonald, right? The long-standing controller of Hawke's Bay Civil Defence and Emergency Group. You think he was pushed rather than resigned, even though it's being put across as a resignation? What's your feeling?
Oh, my feeling is he would have been pushed, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, the report is very damning in all sorts of different ways. And, you know, basically where I live should never have flooded, shouldn't have actually flooded. They're saying that there was debris in the river mouth, which there wasn't. We've got photographic evidence that there was no debris, there was no slash or anything like that blocking it. It was actually one of the neighbours' operations that was blocking the water getting out into the ocean. So we flooded, my neighbourhood flooded, and we shouldn't have. It shouldn't have flooded to that extent, but it did. So
that's Eskdale, right?
That's Eskdale, yeah.
Tell us about what had the neighbour been doing that contributed to this?
Oh, it's a hard fill. So it's a operation. He's got resource consent to do it from the council, but I don't believe it's compliant. So they're sort of dealing with that now. So it's kind of reclaimed a lot of land that has changed the movement of the river. So
okay, gotcha, yeah.
It's almost a dam. It's basically caused a dam. And you can see there's lots of video footage and photographs of whether the water was flowing or whether it wasn't. And, you know, it wasn't a flash flood, but the water couldn't get out. So all of a sudden there was this massive torrent of water because the land behind us, it opened up basically, and it was the only way the water could get out. It kind of stopped us from ourselves, but behind us in subdivision, that was completely underwater. It shouldn't have been. And remembering my neighbour's the 2-year-old girl that drowned.
We know that.
Yeah, so that should not have happened.
Okay, so if the water had been following its natural course, that wouldn't have happened?
No, we would have got a bit of flooding, but nothing to the extent that we did. Nothing to the extent.
And what, the compliance hadn't been monitored?
No, that's right. That's right. So he was working under a resource consent that hadn't been updated since 2015, I think, which is fine because you can work under the same resource consent that you have waiting for them to you know, redo it. But what we're trying to check now is, had it been checked, had it been having the inspections, et cetera, which we don't believe it had. Because if it had, they would have seen that it was non-compliant.
Yeah, and something could have been done ahead of time is really the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead, we got to subdivide a whole bunch of properties behind us. Same landowner.
Right, I see.
And we're not gunning for him. We're not gunning for him at all. We're gunning for the council because they have allowed this to happen.
So this wasn't a 1-in-1,000-year event?
I don't know what they're calling it now. I'm getting confused by all the 1 in 100.
That's bandied around because in 1938 there were floods, we found out now, bigger than Gabrielle's. Mm-hmm. And that data was, well, Ian Wishart found that data, no problem.
Yeah. And, of course, the flooding mainly was the East Valley, the net flood, not where we are.
Okay, so what do we go through here? I'll just make a few points from Ian's reporting. NIWA's lack of historical storm data meant the risk of storms like Cyclone Gabrielle, where 11 people died, was underestimated. What was supposed to be a once-in-a-millennia weather event has actually occurred several times over decades. That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, I listened to his interview and it was amazing what he's found out. It's like, you know, these people that we put our trust into, they come and they go and they don't remember what's been done in the past. I mean, I sat in a meeting at Pakapai and they're talking about the flood mitigation there and that they've rebuilt the stock banks to 1 in 100. And it's like they apparently, one person in the audience said they were never built to 1 in 100 in the first place. So they've just put back what was never going to be any good anyway and now letting people live there. It's there's a lot of craziness going on, I can tell you. You know, bottom line, and Ian has said this, we should have been evacuated. And they should have known what was going to happen. We should have been evacuated. It was going to stop that flood. And, you know, we look at the massive amounts of flooding we got around in our area, and now we've found out that actually it shouldn't have even been that.
This is all done on modelling, it's the impression I get. And you just made the point that this, you know, the historical memory has been fragmented or erased in this case. Isn't, though, it the responsibility fundamentally for people in this field to, you know, that's the first thing you need to know. The first thing. What is the history? Right? How could you miss that? How could you miss that, is it?
Well, I mean, it shocked me. But then, you know, we've talked about this resignation of Ian MacDonald, and it's something that I've been shouting from the rooftops it should have happened, because it's not his first rodeo, you know, and it's not the first time he's been missing in action when a flood's happened. He was gone in the 2018 floods that we had here. You know, and he's saying there's people outside our region that think, oh, give the guy a break, you know, poor guy, would have been a stressful time and all the rest of it. No way. You get put into that position. You don't go on holiday when there's a cyclone coming and you knew about it. And he's saying he didn't know. And then he wasn't in contact, you know, while he was on holiday because he was doing some root burn trail. I mean, that's just outrageous. And then when the reports come out, he's on holiday again so none of the media can get hold of him. You know, there's a lot of covering up going on. It's despicable.
Well, the information I have here is that he's been a member of the Army Reserve for over 30 years, currently holding the rank of colonel.
I didn't know that.
You'd expect someone, you know, with that in their life to be always thinking strategically, always.
And, you know, he's the one that took the communities away from, you know, having the responsibility for, if there is an event, the communities are the ones that, you know, what to do. Well, he took that all away and made it centralised. You know, there were community hubs. Waimarama, for example, had a community hub that they raised money for and bought all this equipment, and they went and shut it down. Said, no, it's not to be run by the community. And what's the first thing that comes out in all these reports? It should be in the community, because the community know how things flood. The community know that we flooded in 1938 or 6, whatever it was. The community know what happens with the river, you know, they know. And then, of course, when the event happened, and what happened? The community had to try and save people because people that we relied on didn't have an evacuation plan. They didn't have rescue plans. You know, it was just an absolute shit show.
With 11 deaths, there has to be some accountability, serious accountability, doesn't there? I mean,
absolutely.
More than just a slap on the wrist, surely. Mm-hmm. What do you think would be appropriate?
Class action.
Yeah.
100%. And we're looking into it. You know, we've got a family member that lost their child, and they'll never get their daughter back, but they don't want it happening to somebody else. And that's their main thing, is let's not let this happen to someone else. And, you know, I thought that Ian Wishart made a really good point about using Cave Creek as an example.
Yeah.
You know, and there was accountability, and so it cleaned up the act. That, you know, wouldn't that be great if we can get that to happen, that, you know, with more weather events happening, it's not going to be like it was before. And we've had all these promises made. You know, one of the promises was about making sure that the laws are different for when there is a major event, so that people that are wanting to jump in a speedboat to go and help aren't going to be, you know, convicted from health work safe or anything like that, because that's basically what happened at the time. They were trying to ground helicopters and they were, you know, so you can't go out in that speedboat because it's dangerous. And, you know, the government was saying, well, let's change that so that it's not business as usual for the next disaster, which is what they tried to do in Christchurch as well. So, you know, there's that promise made. There was about the Defence Force. Can we use the Defence Force better when there's a natural disaster so that the looting doesn't occur and the lawlessness? Because that was extreme after that disaster. Well, nothing's been done.
Oh, extreme, extreme.
Yeah, that's right. It was, and, you know, we only heard about what was happening in our neighbourhoods, but in Napier itself, I mean, it was carnage, you know. The supermarkets were just getting raided and all sorts of horrible things were happening. Road workers, you know.
Everything hangs by a thread, doesn't it, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, and I tell you what generally happened with Cyclone Gabrielle is that the good way outweighed the evil, because there was so much good. There were so many people that came and helped from all over New Zealand, and it's something that none of us will ever forget. And it's still happening. There's still some really good people out there still helping, you know. And I think I'd rather focus on that, because, I mean, the evil bastards, they took advantage of this awful situation that people were in. You know, it's despicable, but definitely the good way outweighed that. It's when it's the authorities that are the bad. That's what winds me up, because I sort of look at the, you know, the what's been happening since the cyclone and people trying to get on with their lives. And, you know, some of those lives lost were suicides. And,
really?
You know, that's just not, we're not allowed to talk about that. Mm. Yeah, but, you know, out of the 11, there were lives lost, three that I know of in the coroner's report that were self-inflicted. And, you know, there's a lot of decisions made after the cyclone that's absolutely torn people's lives apart, and it's still carrying on. You know, the stupid category system, the buyout, voluntary buyout negotiations, all that stuff, it's just made it really, really hard for people. And still, you know, there's no consistency. We've got, in my neighbourhood, all of our neighbours have now either repaired or they're sold, and the houses are going to be repaired. Now, one neighbour, who happens to be the family that lost their daughter, they are now looking, they've had a house that's going to be put on their property, so their old house will be demolished and they're putting a brand new house there. So the rules are different for them. They can't rebuild there until the mitigation's done, which could be years, or they have to build on poles that are 2.4. Why? Like, none of this makes any sense.
I want to get your comment on that, because it sounds, and I don't want to sound tinfoily here at all, but if you go through the whole thing, I mean, we haven't even talked about NIWA, but there's NIWA and them lacking the data, apparently, though.
Apparently,
I wonder about that. Maybe it's just a selective use of data. But also there's the centralising of emergency management, re-civil defence, which is a no-brainer. Anyone can work that out, that locals know best. And if they've actually bought the gear, hands off, it doesn't belong to you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the other thing. Then there's the not monitoring compliance for someone who had made alterations to a property that caused big problems. Nature not necessarily responsible for how it turned out. Then you've got this, I mean, the list is endless. The civil defence controller, who's sort of AWOL when these things happen and is behind the decentralisation, as you explained it. And now you've got the consequences, the aftermath, where people are having problems with their properties, all those things. Mm. I hate to say, but it sounds like it's by design in some way.
Yeah, I know. We're starting to wonder about that, because it's all of this the caveat's been put on limb reports. And so my house wasn't flooded, but on our limb report, we're going to be in a flood zone. And we're already beachfront, so we've already got coastal erosion on our limb report. So it's making it impossible for people, you know. The whole of the East Valley has been decimated. There's so many people have had to leave. But then you've got areas like Tongoyo up the line a little bit, and a lot of those properties weren't flooded, brand new properties, and they've had to demolish them.
Yeah, well, why?
No, that's by design. Well, that for another one, design.
Another once in a thousand year event.
They weren't. But how can you demolish a house that was never flooded? How can you? I mean, we've got, and it's because Nick Peat at the regional council, he is digging his toes in, and he will not be moved on any of this. And everyone is saying, well, you use the category system to see where the intolerable risk to life is, right? So now that's done, the buyout's happened, lift the category system. You don't need a category system anymore because it was only there for one purpose. They've insisted on keeping it. And so what that means is that you've got some properties that might have a slither of category 3, so insurance won't touch them. You know?
Oh, dear. Yeah.
You couldn't write about this stuff. You couldn't make it up.
No. So Nick Peat is the CEO, is he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should he go?
Oh, God, yeah. He should never have come. He sort of came. I think he, you know, they went through. They had James Palmer, who had left before the cyclone. And then there was an interim. I think there were two interim CEOs. One had lots of experience with things like the site. He sort of follows disasters, this guy. I can't remember his name now. But he was involved in Christchurch and all different areas. But he didn't stay. And then Nick Peat has now got the position. And he's the one that's come up with this category system. And I can remember being at a meeting where they were going to eyeball every single property so that, you know, they didn't just make a blanket decision. And they never did it. And I can remember sitting in that meeting saying, they're not going to do that. They won't have the resources to do that. And sure enough, they never did it. So they've never eyeballed properties before they've gone and categorised them. They've just put a blanket map over everything, and if you didn't flood and you're in that category, tough. I think I've told you this before. You know, we did have a loss of life in our street, but across the road, across the state highway, no one died, but they're category 3. We're category 2.
Yeah, it's because just, the benchmark is intolerable, isn't it? It's intolerable threat to life, which is a very high bar.
Very high bar. Now, if you're talking a 1 in 500-year flood, well, we're not going to have any risk to life because we won't be alive in 500 years.
Yeah, it's all meaningless, all that.
It's so meaningless. Yeah. Yeah, intolerable risk to life. Well, the intolerable risk to life is them not evacuating us, because had they done that based on the modelling, then Ivy would still be alive. That family would have got their kids out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
No two ways. And like you say, there will be consequences over that.
So this is not over yet by any means.
Not by any means. And I think the catalyst has been the independent review, because it is damning. It is absolutely damning. I keep using that word, which is ironic because that's exactly what happened at the end.
Damning.
Your road.
Yeah. Have there been any apologies at all?
No. And that was the thing is, you know, you resign or you're pushed, but an apology would have gone a long way. But no one's ever going to admit fault. They will never admit fault.
Well, you know, sometimes you've got to put the big boys and girls trousers on, right? And release your conscience and do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think, you know, I think for some people, they wouldn't be able to sleep at night if they admitted.
Well, they're not sleeping anyway, Louise,
so they
probably.
Had to go into denial.
They're not probably sleep. They're probably not sleeping anyway, you know.
I don't know. Maybe I'm more of a skeptic because, I mean, I can remember early on after the disaster, and there was a Magpies game. It was like a charity Magpies game, and everyone could go for free, and we didn't go because we were still, you know, up to our eyes in bloody silt and stuff. But I do remember seeing a picture of Ian McDonald receiving a Magpies jersey on the field. And just going, you are kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. you know, he wasn't here for the whole of that flood and comes back and takes the glory for him. So no, I don't know if he sleeps. I don't know. I think he does.
It's good to have you back, Louise. Please pass on our regards to the family that you talked about.
Of course, of course.
I think about that every now and then, actually, personally, and I'm sure our audience do as well, and everyone else too.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming back on, and I suppose next time we talk, we may be talking about the resignation of Dr. Nick Peat, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my rates are going to go up.
They are now.
That's worth it.
Okay, we'll talk again soon. Thanks for coming back on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.